You are on the next level. This is The Beautiful Truth on BreakForNews.com, where the expression is still free.
20 seconds and counting. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
And you're very welcome. This is The Beautiful Truth on BreakForNews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. Thanks for joining us. We're going to take a look at the issue of global warming or global cooling. And the big question for you is, are you prepared to pay the price to see all those global warming apologists begging on street corners, freezing their asses off? Are you willing to pay the price? Are you prepared to freeze your ass off for the next 30 or 40 years for the sheer joy of seeing all those global warming proponents proven wrong? Because it might just come down to that, folks. It could easily come down to that. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the threat of imminent global cooling. A threat which we might well have noticed if it wasn't for the fact that we're being hammered left, right and centre 24/7, 365 with global warming propaganda based on manipulated temperature readings, wacky computer models, and all the rest of the hype that goes with that, well, industry, I suppose you'd have to call it. But you see, underneath all that, there's something else going on. Let me take you back in time, way back in time, all the way back to December of last year. Because in December of last year, it started to become obvious that something unusual was going on. You see, and I'm quoting now from the Washington Times, December 19, 2007, about South America having one of its coldest winters in decades. In Buenos Aires, snow fell for the first time since 1918. It was the same down in South Africa, where Johannesburg had their first significant snowfall in 26 years. Indeed, Baghdad had its first snowfall ever. Ever, folks. Australia had the coldest June ever, and all across the United States there were records being set in December in Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Ohio and Oregon. Not record warming, no, record cold temperatures. Canada had one of its worst winters. And as we moved on into 2008, the news got even worse for the proponents of global warming, because it emerged from all of the so-called independent monitoring bodies which monitor world temperature. Even with their skewed data, they could not conceal the fact, as was reported in February of this year, that the previous 12 months had seen a record drop in world temperatures. Across the board, you're looking at just over one-third of a degree of a drop in global temperatures in just 12 months. It was astonishing, and it was seen, as I say, from Texas to Florida, from Greenland to Argentina and Chile. The list goes on. Now, before we go any further, it will be worth just checking in to see how are the global warming scientists dealing with what's going on. Not very well, I'm afraid. In fact, very poorly. There has been in Northern Europe a very wet summer. Actually, last year as well. In Northern Europe, there was also a very wet summer. So here is Martin Parry. He's a UK climate scientist. He's with the Met Office in the UK, and he's also on that IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And here he is being interviewed about that unusual wet weather.
Martin Parry, the bottom line is you know a lot more than most of us about this business of climate change. And after this awful summer we've had, is this what global warming means?
Not necessarily. I wish we knew exactly what it meant, and it doesn't. And this is not another scientist just trying to wriggle off the hook.
Isn't that lovely? Excuse me for interrupting. But when they say this is not a scientist trying to wriggle out of something, that's when you know that this is a scientist trying to wriggle out of something. Here we go. More from Martin Parry.
Unfortunately, the very wet summer that you have had, and I've had on the east coast of England in Suffolk where I live, is not something actually that we would expect. We generally expect to have drier summers but wetter winters.
Isn't that just lovely? He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what's going on. And their model said that actually they expected the wet weather in the winter, not in the summer. That's having it ass backwards where I come from. I don't know about you. That's getting it totally wrong. But hey, that's not stopping Martin Parry.
But one thing we have seen this summer is rainfall coming much more heavy. A warmer atmosphere carries much more moisture. Mm-hmm. And we do expect downpours to be more heavy. And that's just what has been occurring.
Well, there you have it. That takes guts. To get it so badly wrong, you said it was going to be wetter in the winter, not the summer. And in fact, not only is it wet in the summer, but it's really wet. And you're claiming that because you said the rain was going to be stronger, that therefore you're really essentially right. No, if it rains very badly in the summer, that means you're even more wrong. So these guys are out to lunch, folks. They haven't got a clue. Very hard to maintain. Of course, you notice maybe that they're starting to call it climate change, not global warming. A vain attempt to cover their asses, because everybody knows they've been talking about global warming. So it's going to get harder and harder to maintain that global warming is taking place if, in fact, we enter a lot of cold weather. Harder and harder, folks. So what is going on? And we've had Professor Bob Carter on the show before. He's a skeptic on the issue of global warming. We also have forum member Shroom, who's pointed out the volcanic activity that's going on underneath the ocean floors may be, in fact, what's driving the carbon dioxide phenomenon. But if that is happening, then how come we're talking about cold? You see, this isn't just being plucked out of the air, and you're going to hear more about this, folks. If you haven't already, you will hear more about this, because there's a reason why all that's happening. And we'll get to that reason. We'll look into the science behind it and the very real threat of a significant global cooling taking place over the next 20 to 30 years and kicking in real soon, as you see from those reports earlier this year. It's got to do not with CO2, but it's got to do with the sun. The sun, of course, is a huge factor in our climate. With all the hype about global warming, it's easy to dismiss the role of the sun. As Bucky Fuller pointed out to us back in 1980, mankind has used in energy, in total, in the entire existence of humanity on the planet, a half a millionth of the daily energy from the sun. That's it. Isn't that some statistic? In all of our fossil fuel burning and all the rest that we've done, our total energy consumption is only a half a millionth of the energy we get in one day from the sun. That's how important the sun is. But the sun's output does not vary remarkably. It's remarkably consistent, as you'd expect. But what does vary is the magnetic effects coming from the sun. And those magnetic effects are part of what drives the sunspot phenomenon on the sun. You see, there may be more going on here than just some aberrant variability in global weather. And that's something could have a lot to do with what's happening on the sun. Or what's not happening on the sun, to be specific. Because there are no sunspots. You see, back in 1996, the last solar sunspot cycle started off. And it ramped up quickly in about 4 years. And then, of course, the sunspots began to decline in the normal way they do in the 11-year cycle. And the sun slowly went quieter and quieter and quieter. So quiet that it confounded all the experts. The peak of sunspot activity had been in November 2001. And the number of spots fell during 2006 to a minimum. And the solar experts predicted a new cycle would begin by the autumn of 2006. Well, it's heading into the autumn of 2008 right now. But anyway, needless to say, the sun is still quiet, by the way. That cycle didn't kick back in. So the experts from the NOAA and NASA held another meeting, and this time they predicted, well, it will start in March 2008. But it didn't. And now the Australian Space Weather Agency recently predicted that, well, it will start in April 2009. We'll see. Because it hasn't started yet, folks. Stories have begun to crop up in recent weeks about August. What happened in August? August was the first calendar month with no sunspots since 1913. Now, the sun doesn't really pay attention to Earth calendar months, so maybe that's not the best way to examine this. You'd be better looking at the number of continuous days where the surface of the sun was completely devoid of any sunspots. And we had the fourth longest ever recorded at 50 days plus, and we're still in it, and we're still waiting. And the sun has now been blank for 50 days without a single sunspot. And the start of the solar cycle is late. Remember, they were predicting it would kick in the fall of 2006. Here we are heading into the fall of 2008. And not only has it not kicked in, but the sun has gone completely quiet. Now, as I say, you're going to hear more and more and more about this. Because there have been many reputable scientists and geologists and others who have been looking at the role of the sun in Earth's weather for many years. They're quite experienced at it, and some of those are warning that this could be a sign that we're heading into an extremely cold period. So maybe that's why we're getting the cold weather, is because of what's going on with the sun. We'll get into that. Just to point out some more about how badly the scientists can get this wrong. Back in 2006, they were talking about the next solar sunspot cycle would be, well, one of the biggest ever. I'm not so sure about that now. Those predictions don't look so good. They're a bit on the defensive, actually, because they're having to put out reports now from the space watching authorities saying, look, don't worry about it. There's nothing wrong with the sun. Everything's fine. It'll fix itself, but will it? That's a good question, and we'll try and give you an answer to that. In order to understand that, the very first thing you need to have an understanding of is, well, what is going on with sunspots? What does go on with sunspots? What's happening there? In many ways, we're not really sure. There's a lot of theories, but those theories are still being evaluated, and nevertheless, we have got some basic ideas of how sunspots work. You have a difference, a huge difference, between the sunspots from one solar cycle and the following one. The difference is this: the magnetic fields of the sunspots reverse from cycle to cycle. And in fact, there is a bit of an overlap. So if you have magnetic fields of sunspots from, say, cycle 23, which is the one just passed, and they're declining, you can tell those sunspots by their magnetic orientation. And as they decline and fade, the usual pattern is that they're overlaid with sunspots from the next cycle, which have a reversed magnetic field. And so you have one dropping off while the other begins to rise up. What we've got at the moment is that cycle 23 has stopped, and we still haven't had a decent kick in of cycle 24. That's the problem. In fact, all we've had is a single solitary sunspot from cycle 24 back in January, and then nothing more. And now the sun's gone quiet. This is very anomalous, folks. Now, the NASA authorities are rushing to reassure us that no, it's nothing to worry about. Everything's just hunky-dory. I mean, we often have solar cycles that are a little bit delayed, and some are longer than others, and of course there are short ones and long ones, and don't worry, it's going to be fine. But it ain't as simple as that, folks. Here's something the global warming people don't want to look at. They don't want to look at what happened on a couple of occasions in the not too distant past in relation to the sun, sunspots, and Earth weather. We had a period from about 1650 to 1750. It was at its worst, when we had, in effect, a mini ice age. And you may have heard of that. It's called the Maunder Minimum. And during that period, there were crop failures, and this is particularly well recorded in the United Kingdom. We speak English, they kept historical records, and everybody knows that back then you could skate on the River Thames because it froze over. These were Dickensian times, shall we say. And we had another similar period around about 1800 to 1820-30. We had the Dalton Minimum. And temperatures also plunged then. And guess what? In both of those periods, sunspot activity decreased dramatically, leading to the possible conclusion that an absence of sunspot activity on the sun causes these dramatic drops in temperature on Earth. And therefore, we really should be paying attention to what's happening with the sun right now. How could it cause such an effect if, as I've said earlier, the output of the sun is consistent? The sun doesn't really vary that much in terms of its output. It's remarkably consistent, like a 100-watt bulb that always generates 100 watts of light. But what changes is the magnetic component. And the magnetic component is what's driving the sunspot activity. And when that changes, what happens is that the lower magnetic field allows, theorists say, cosmic rays to come in, and they seed the formation of clouds. So if you don't have that magnetic protective covering on Earth, the cosmic rays are coming right in. They're generating ions in the upper atmosphere. Those ions float down into the lower atmosphere, and there they help seed off cloud formation. As a result of that cloud formation, the Earth then reflects a lot of its heat that it's normally getting from the sun, never gets down to Earth because of the increased cloud, and that's a cumulative effect. So that's the mechanism by which this thing could be working. Now, even those who support the global warming model, many of them agree that the sun has an effect. And it's very hard to argue with the complete 100% correlation in the Maunder and Dalton minimums with absence of sunspots on the sun and record low temperatures on Earth. Real hard to argue with it, so they don't try. But what they say is, oh, well, the global warming effect is so strong that it like blots out these effects from the sun. Remember that figure I gave you about all of the energy that mankind has used in all of its history being 1/500,000th of the energy we receive in one day from the sun? Factor that in to whether you want to believe that assertion. And if the link between sunspots and Earth is valid, and I think it is, then we could be in some serious trouble. We'll try and reach some kind of a determination for you, or at least give you the information to make your own call on this. But one thing you are going to hear about is you're going to hear about a pair of astronomers from the National Solar Observatory in Tucson. They tried to publish a paper in the journal Science back in 2005. They had been doing an examination of the spectroscope and magnetic data from the sun. And by extrapolating forward, they reached the conclusion that within about 10 years, sunspots would vanish entirely. Now, at the time, the sun was very active. And not only did everybody laugh, but the paper wasn't published. It was refused to be published. And I think you're going to hear about those two, Livingston and Penn, and their paper, Sunspots May Vanish by 2015. What they were looking at was the actual magnetic power component within sunspots. And what they saw was a decline in that. And they drew some graphs and they extended out from the decline. This is observing the actual magnetic fields. They managed to work out what the power of those magnetic fields was. And they said, hey, this thing is going to stop generating sunspots in 2015. If we connect the dots on our graphs, it bottoms out to zero in 2015. No more sunspots. And they have more than a little data to verify that. In fact, even NASA admits that the conveyor belt, which drives these sunspots down deep into the sun and then back up again and out onto the surface, that magnetic conveyor belt has decreased in speed at a remarkable rate, slowed down dramatically. So I think the Livingston and Penn data it has some validity to it. The problem is that they're basing it on a very short data range. I mean, they're looking at a period from about 1998 through to now, and they're saying there's a linear trend there. And you just have to be a bit careful about extrapolating from such a short number of years. And if you don't have anything to go on to say, well, look, hey, this happened before and here's how it went, then to an extent you're guessing in the dark. And so I can't put too much validity on that Livingston and Penn paper. And to an extent, I'm not too surprised that it was refused publication. Nevertheless, you are going to hear all about the Livingston and Penn paper, because the media loves stuff like that. We are not the mainstream media. We're not in the business of being here to scare you about stuff. We're trying to give you a good assessment of it. I don't think you got to watch the Livingston and Penn. I think that you need to pay attention to what a guy called Dr. Theodore Landscheid is saying. And also, you should pay attention to what a guy called David Archibald is saying. And I'll be back in just a moment to fill you in on his analysis of what's going on. And I think that's a much more substantial analysis, much harder to argue with. Let's take a bit of music and I'll be right back with details of that. What have we got here? This is cold. No, I don't mean this is cold, this is cold weather. I mean, this is cold, the group cold. What a coincidence. And When Angels Fly Away. This is Beautiful Truth on the Next Level on breakfornews.com. And we'll be right back.
I'll make a soldier's decision to fly away. Load my gun, paint my face, cold in misery. I can see the sky light up and the ground explode. We'll be right back.
This is The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. Now, I've got a lot of data on this. I'm boggle-eyed from statistics. Lies, damn lies, and statistics, and nobody knows that better than the global warming apologists. But I do have a lot of data and links that you can go to and check through this information yourself, and a couple of YouTube videos that you should definitely check out from David Archibald. If you're on the homepage of breakfornews.com, just click on the photo that goes with this audio, and you'll get to a forum post where you'll get all that detail. And I'm also going to put in there, I won't get into the theories of Dr. Theodor Landscheid from Germany, because I'll let you just read that. The title of the article I'll link in the forum is New Little Ice Age Instead of Global Warming? ? And you can have a read of that yourself. I would rather focus on the presentations which have been given by David Archibald. Now, there's a lot of really good anti-global warming analysis being done down in Australia and New Zealand. That's where he's based. But he has given, back in March of 2008, a presentation in the United States on the implications of all that's happening on the sun for the USA. And I'd rather just focus on David's work, and you can check out Landscheid's work yourself. But anyway, I'm not going to give unqualified approval to what David is talking about. For example, he points out, as do many others, including Bob Carter, who has been on the show before, Professor Bob Carter. He's also down in Aussieland. And both he and Archibald say that since 1998, we've been in a cooling period. That was when the El Nino peak was in 98. Certainly that was anomalous in terms of the record temperatures, and it helped drive the hysteria around global warming. But it's a little unfair, I think, to say that we've been in a decline since then. The mainstream say, oh no, we haven't. Temperatures are still rising. But we know their figures are manipulated. Just go and check that out on the internet yourself. You'll find plenty of evidence that they're manipulating the data, and they're also relying on very poor temperature sensors, which are located in areas that are subject to urban heating, which is skewing the data, and they're not correcting for that properly. In fact, from analysis, and there are people on the internet all over these guys on the issue of their data, not only are they not correcting that data, but they're actually tweaking it to make it look worse. The evidence is in on that, folks. But I'd say the best you could say is that temperatures have been flat, apart from, of course, the huge collapse in temperatures of between one third and a half a degree, about 0.37 of a degree in the year 2007. So factor that in. But other than that, it certainly has been stable, not rising on since 98, and then that big collapse, which we're saying is possibly tied in to what's happening on the sun. However, not all of the points that he makes can be challenged. He makes a lot of really good points. I wish it was easy to dismiss David Archibald, but it's not. For example, he points out there's been a 1 million square kilometre increase over the long-term mean in Antarctic and Arctic sea ice extent. So you can't sneeze at that. And this is supposed to be in a period of global warming. Archibald is focused on what happened back in the medieval warm period, which preceded that Maunder minimum I spoke about in 1750. A few hundred years before that, actually the temperature was 2 degrees warmer than today, and then it fell during the Little Ice Age to 2 degrees colder. So that was a variation, a drop in change in temperature of 4 degrees centigrade. Now, by comparison, Archibald says that the warming over the 20th century was just over half a degree. And Archibald points out something that has often escaped our attention, which is that, you know, most of the time we are in glacial periods. And what we are in right now is actually called an interglacial period, one between ice ages. So it wouldn't be entirely surprising if we had a fall in temperatures and began a new ice age period. Again, I'll just challenge him slightly on that. He does analysis of previous ice ages and interglacial periods, and he says that we could any day now begin to head into a little ice age, which could take us in to a full-blown ice age any time from now over the next 3,000 years. And that's certainly true. We could. But by the same token, it could be another 1,000 years before we see any effect, or even up 2,000 years before we see any kind of a change that would drive us into a new full-blown ice age. So yeah, it could happen, but it could also not happen. You're looking at a 3,000-year window there, and sometime in the next 3,000 years, he's correct in saying that, you know, the data indicates we will head into an ice age. Question is, are we heading into one right now? Well, the evidence that Archibald has that we may be is based not on the peaks that we see during these sunspot cycles, but on the length of the cycle. Not its amplitude, but the length of the cycle. And that's very important, because right now we're looking at the cycle 24 still not having kicked in, being anything up to 2 years late. And what Archibald has done, he's gone back and he's historically looked at data, and he shows graphs in his presentations which indicate that the longer the solar cycle is, then the lower the temperature is. And there's a correlation there between shorter solar cycles having warmer temperatures associated with them and longer ones having lower temperatures associated with them. And that's why we have a problem, because the average is about 11 years. In fact, it's 10.7 years. And if solar cycle 23 was going to be of average length, we should have had solar cycle 24 kick in back at the end of 2006. And here we now are approaching the end of 2008. So we're looking at not 10.7, not 11.7, but 12.7 years up to around about 13 years. It looks likely this will be at least a 13-year solar cycle, cycle 23, that's ending right now. So let's bring it down to Earth. And he does. He brings it down to Earth in a place called Hanover, New Hampshire, where he plots the data record and he takes a look at how that compares with the length of the solar sunspot cycle. And there's a decline of 0.75 degrees Celsius per year based on the solar cycle. And he says that means that if we get, and we're almost certain to get now, at least a 13-year solar cycle, 2 years longer than you'd expect, there will be, he says, based on the historical record, over a 2-degree decline in temperature in Hanover, New Hampshire over the next decade. Perhaps 2 to 3 times any kind of an effect that you could expect from global warming. The global warming people say that by the end of the century, you could be talking about 6 degrees of temperature rise. But of course, they're compounding to get that figure. The actual, if you look at the statistics on this, and don't use the assumptions built into their climate models, but just look at the heat retention capacity of carbon dioxide, which is not the major greenhouse gas, by the way. Water vapor is the major greenhouse gas. About 95% of the greenhouse effect is due to water vapor, not carbon dioxide. So the carbon dioxide component is very minimal. And the real effect you would get from carbon dioxide-based warming is around about 0.75 degrees, maybe 1 degree at most. He's saying that this effect from the longer solar cycle 23 is going to be at least a 2.2 degree fall in temperature. In terms of what that means for farmers, that's significant, because if you have something like a 2 to 2.5 degree decline in temperature, that's going to hack off about a month off the growing season. And that means it's not going to be a good time to be a farmer in the northern latitudes. What's going to happen is that the decline in temperature will actually shift the optimum area for plant growth, shifted southwards by anything up to 200 miles, 150, 200 miles south. And it's going to hack off a month off the growing season. So you're talking about a significant effect on food production. And you know the issues we already have with food production. And we certainly could not afford to lose a month off the growing season. That would have a significant impact. And there's a deep irony built in to all of this. If you are a professional horticulturalist and you're using greenhouses to grow your plants in, the professionals like to have a lot of carbon dioxide in the air in the greenhouse. Because if you do that, you can get an increase in production. An increase in production which may vary from anything from a 25% increase to perhaps a 35, 40, 45% increase in production from your plants if you have lots of carbon dioxide. In fact, Archibald says there's nothing wrong with carbon dioxide. It's brilliant, it's terrific, and we could do with lots of it if indeed he's correct that we are headed into a period when we will see perhaps a 2 or more degree drop in global temperatures and a significant reduction in food production because of that. How ironic can you get that the policies that are being followed right now by the global warming proponents could in fact be the exact opposite of what we need. Some people are going to get lynched if this turns out to be correct, that we have seen a period in the second half of the 20th century when in fact temperatures were at record level, but that was just a temporary phenomenon. And it was linked to solar activity, and it was linked into the El Nino effect. And at the precise moment when we should have been taking action to try and get ourselves lots of carbon dioxide, we actually did the reverse and reduced our carbon dioxide. That really is only a nasty dig at the global warming people, because in practical terms, we can't really do an awful lot about it with our man-made CO2 production. As I said earlier, it's water vapor that is responsible for 95% of the greenhouse effect. And carbon dioxide only represents something like around 3.5% of the global warming effect. And of that carbon dioxide, a lot of it is natural. And the man-made component, which carbon dioxide puts in other words, from fossil fuels, etc., that's only about 0.1% of global warming. So unfortunately, starting to burn lots of coal isn't necessarily going to dig us out of the hole. In fact, it's not. We would have to be burning from here till eternity to try and change the carbon dioxide level to the extent that it would actually provide us with any benefit. Because there is actually a fall off in the bang you get for your buck with carbon dioxide. With a certain amount of it, similar to what it's at the moment, you get a certain warming effect from it, but more doesn't necessarily give you more warming, unfortunately. So I don't know, folks. There you go. I've tried to cut through a mass. It would drive you nuts researching this. You're welcome. By all means, have a go. If you have the guts to do so, and the persistence, and the mind for the detail on it. What I've tried to do here is to cut through an awful lot of the political science which is going on, and spotlight for you some of the key researchers and whether or not you should take a look at their data. I really wish that it was possible to dismiss what Archibald is saying, because, you know, I'd love to see the global warming crew get their faces wiped in the mud, as I'm sure many others would, who know that this is a scam and who know the reason for it as well is to do with governments attempting to put themselves in a position of power over people and over their lives and tell them what to do and scare them and all those things that governments love to do in order to justify their existence, as well as, of course, retard the economic development of the developing world by moaning on about their CO2 output to them while we continue to ignore it. So those are the motivations, and yeah, I'd love to see them proved wrong, but I'd hate to be freezing my ass off for the next 25, 30 years as the price of that. Although, if the global warming thing goes down, so many people are going to start questioning so many things that they have been given as received wisdom from the so-called experts. So there will be quite an impact. But whether it works out or not, there is going to be more about this, because it's starting to get noticed more and more, the issue of the lack of solar activity on the sun. And I don't see any sign that it's starting to warm up since what happened in 2007. In fact, I see a continuation of the same trend. And I think as we see the data coming out, we'll see a continuation, if not indeed an increase in cold. And maybe at the end of the day, for me, I love the heat. And I'm watching that sun. And I'm, please start up with the sunspots. It could still happen. There are experts who have looked at cycle 23, cycle 24, which we're coming into, and cycle 25. And a lot of people do feel that there is a chance of a reduction in the temperature because of the sun kicking in, maybe from the next one on. So who knows? Who knows? It's a real hard one to call this. I can't call it for you. All I can do is present you with the data. Make the call on it yourself. But the truth may be vastly different to what's going on in the media. And there could be hell to pay over the next couple of years as we see a continuation of the failure of Cycle 24 to appear. And maybe there's another deeper irony as we go into our exit tune, which is walking into the sun. Give me those sunspots, baby. I want to feel the heat. Anyway, that's it. I will be back with more very shortly, and I do hope you can join me for that. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from home. Keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from home. Keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.